In chapter 12 is titled as Creation of the Kumaras and Others. Creation of the Kumaras and Others. So text 28 is as follows.
O Vidura, O Vidura, we have heard that Brahma had a daughter named Vak. O Vidura, we have heard that Brahma had a daughter named Vak, who was born from his body and who attracted his mind toward sex. Although she was not sexually inclined towards him. O Vidura, we have heard that Brahma had a daughter named Vak, who was born from his body and who attracted his mind towards sex, although she was not sexually inclined towards him. Purport. Balavan Indriya Gramo Vidvamsam Api Karshati. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 19, Text 17. It is said that the senses are so mad and strong that they can bewilder even the most sensible and learned man. Therefore, it is advised that one should not indulge in living alone, even with one's mother, sister, or daughter. Vidvamsam apikarsati means that even the most learned also become victims of the sensuous urge. Maitreya hesitated to state this anomaly on the part of Brahma, who was sexually inclined to his own daughter, but still he mentioned it because sometimes it so happens, and the living example is Brahma himself, although he is the primeval living being and the most learned within the whole universe. If Brahma could be a victim of the sexual urge, then what of others who are prone to so many mundane frailties? This extraordinary immorality on the part of Brahma was heard to have occurred in some particular kalpa, but it could not have happened in the kalpa in which Brahma heard directly from the Lord the four essential verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, because the Lord benedicted Brahma after giving him lessons on the Bhagavatam that he would never be bewildered in any kalpa whatsoever. This indicates that before the hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam, he might have fallen a victim to such sensuality. But after hearing Srimad Bhagavatam directly from the Lord, there was no possibility of such failures. One should, however, take serious note of this incident. The human being is a social animal, and his unrestricted mixing with the fair sex leads to fall down. Such social freedom of man and woman, especially among the younger section, is certainly a great stumbling block on the path of spiritual progress. Material bondage is due only to sexual bondage, and therefore unrestricted association of man and woman is surely a great impediment. Maitreya Muni cited this example on the part of Brahma just to bring to our notice this great danger. Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sva Padantikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yatkripatam Maham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vanchakalpataru Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyayavacha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnavi Bhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narayanan Namaskritya Naran Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tatho Jayamudhiraye Nashtaprayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavatir Naishtiki Hare Krishna. Oh Vidura, we have heard that Brahma had a daughter named Vak who was born from his body and who attracted his mind towards sex, although she was not sexually inclined towards him. So, we are currently in the 12th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. All of us don't have this opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam classes every day because some of us have early jobs and may have missed out on some context leading up to this verse. So a very quick 3-minute context on what situation has led up to this verse to bring everyone up to speed. So a conversation is going on between two great personalities, two great devotees of the Lord, Maitreya Muni and Vidura. So that conversation is going on in this section of Srimad Bhagavatam. In the earlier chapter, which is chapter 11 of Canto 3, the aspect of time, the Kala factor, the Kala Shakti of the Lord was discussed in great detail. Srimad Bhagavatam has got many subject matters, out of which Sarga and Visarga are two primary subject matters. Sarga implies the primary creation and Visarga implies the secondary creation. Sarga implies what the Lord directly created and Visarga implies how Brahmaji got the knowledge to manipulate whatever the Lord has created and create his secondary creation. So, in the opening section of this particular chapter, there is a question asked on continuing to describe the Visarga, the secondary creation, the creation of Lord Brahma. So Maitreya Muni has started describing this to Vidura. And he describes the sequence in which Lord Brahma is creating the secondary creation. Lord Brahma starts by creating things which are concerned with the mode of ignorance. So he starts with that. So it is mentioned that he started creating the concept of self-deception, the principle of anger, the principle of illusion. All this was created first by Lord Brahma. These are all in the mode of ignorance. Now, Lord Brahma, being a pure soul, now if he has to create these kind of things, obviously he is not going to be very happy creating all these kind of things. Especially many of us go to office and at the end of the day, are we very happy about what we do, work we do there? Sometimes a lot of ugra karma is being performed there. So we ourselves do not feel happy despite our all our conditioning and the salary that comes along with it. So imagine Brahma then, how unhappy he would have been having created, you know, things like self-deception, anger, illusion. So obviously he was very unhappy. So he purified himself by meditation. And then immediately when one purifies oneself by meditation, one comes to the mode of Sattva-gun or the mode of goodness. And then he was able to create the four sages, the four Chatu-Kumaras. That is what the title of this chapter is, Creation of the Kumaras. And there are other personalities also that he created after that. So, the four Kumaras were now there in front of him. And obviously Brahma's agenda was to procreate, create progeny in this world. So he requested the four Kumaras, and the four Kumaras, they were pure brahmacharis. They had no interest in worldly life or in procreation. So they refused their father. So Lord Brahma initially tried to control his disappointment. But his disappointment gradually turned to internal anger. And when one is angry, it's only a matter of time that it comes out. So it came out through his, between his eyebrows. So all his anger manifested in the form of a personality whose name was Rudra. So as soon as this personality came out, Lord Brahma gave 11 names to this Rudra, of which Rudra was one name and Shiva is another name, who forms the trinity of Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva or Mahesh. So he gave 11 names. Not only did he give 11 names, but he also gave 11 places of residence to this Rudra, which one of which includes our heart, the heart of living entities. Not only that, he mentioned to Rudra that you will have 11 wives. So he mentioned the names of the 11 wives, and then he asked Rudra to create progeny. Now Rudra, being the personification of anger, and the whole mood of Rudra is destruction. So his progeny thought alike. So as soon as they came out, they started to devour the entire universe. Not only that, they came and attacked Brahma himself, who created them. So obviously this was not a very good situation to be in. So Brahmaji said, thank you very much, but no thanks. Stop creating any further progeny of this category. Because at this time, creation is going on, not dissolution. So, when the time for dissolution comes, we will call you. And then what he told Shiva is, in the meantime, please go to the forest and do penance and cool yourself down. And get ready for the activity of dissolution whenever that turn comes. So, Shiva is Vaishnava Anam Yatha Shambhu. So, he accepted that order from Lord Brahma, and then he entered the forest, and then Lord Brahma continued the activity of procreation. So he had already created created certain principles which were in the mode of ignorance. He had created the four Kumaras now. Now he wanted to create people who will be engaged in fruitive activities, which involves the mode of passion. So there was a lot of personalities like Bhrigumuni, Vashishtha, Daksha and so on and so forth that he created. But at the end of the day, Lord Brahma realized that the goal of human existence is not simply vacillating between the three modes of material nature, but there needs to be someone who is an acharya who can ultimately guide everyone back to Godhead, who can lead mankind towards liberation. Or for devotees, what is the ultimate liberation? It is attaining the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord Narayana or Lord Krishna in Golok Vrindavan. So therefore, he created his best son, who is Narada Muni, who is the spiritual master of the entire universe. It is mentioned that the other children of Lord Brahma came from various facets or aspects of his gross body, whereas Narada Muni specifically came out from his deliberation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, Narada Muni was a special son. The best son is one who can deliver the Supreme Personality of Godhead to anyone and everyone. So that is why his name is Narada, one who can deliver all living entities to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. So that is the context. And then, today's verse, as Maitreya Muni is describing this, it leads to this sequence where Maitreya Muni suddenly remembers an incident that happened, which is mentioned in today's verse, where Brahma produced a daughter whose name was Vak and got sexually inclined towards his own daughter, which is not a very palatable situation. Now, Maitreya Muni's mood was such that initially he hesitated to tell this to Vidura, because these topics are not very good to discuss in any forum, because unnecessarily they will agitate the senses. But nevertheless, he went ahead for the larger benefit of all ordinary jivas such as us, that no one can take their celibacy or spiritual advancement for granted and become proud. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada advises us that we must take a serious note of this incident. In the purport, Prabhupada writes that we must take a serious note of this incident, and then Srila Prabhupada advises us on the do's as well as the don'ts in this matter. What are the do's that Srila Prabhupada advises us in the purport? Srila Prabhupada says that we must take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam. He doesn't tell it directly here, but he implies it by saying that the Lord Brahma who fell down in this pastime fell down because he had not heard Srimad Bhagavatam from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it was one out of the millions of Lord Brahmas that are there. Whereas the Lord Brahmas who had heard Srimad Bhagavatam from the Lord and received explicit blessings from the Lord that you will never fall down, they did not fall down. So this pastime only applies to a specific Brahmaji. So Srila Prabhupada implies that therefore all of us must take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam to overcome sex desire. That is the do. The don'ts, Srila Prabhupada says, is avoid unrestricted mixing with the fair sex. And Srila Prabhupada mentions that he calls this as a great stumbling block in one's spiritual progress. So that was the context, and that is today's verse. Now there are many lessons that one can derive from this section of Srimad Bhagavatam. So when we studied this, we could come out with some 5 points which I could think of. There could be more. One significant point, as we mentioned before, is that one cannot take one's spiritual advancement for granted at any point in time, or engage with the opposite sex without proper guidance and under the instruction of proper authority. Sometimes it can happen that under the name of transcendental devotional service, so the intermingling of the two sexes can go on, even within the realm of, even in devotee life, that can happen. Someone may say that, hang on, Prabhuji, we are not the body, you know, at the end of the day. We are the spirit soul. So therefore, you know, why are you saying that, you know, intermingling of sexes freely should not be there? Because it's not the bodily concept of life. No? Neither somebody is a man nor someone is a woman. Now the issue is that if we really truly believe this, if we have internalized this principle that we are not this body, we are the soul, then there are 10,000 other aspects of devotional service where we can show this. For example, in our dealings with animals, in our dealing with, you know, so many other living entities, then we have a lot of opportunity to show this advancement in 10,000 other ways, not necessarily to intermingle with the opposite sex and quote this philosophy later on. So this cheating propensity is there in all of us because we are still conditioned souls. Therefore, till we become Pandita Samadarshinaha, truly, where we see no man, no woman, which is like Srila Prabhupada's stage, for example, then we are advised to follow the principles of Vaishnava etiquette, the principles of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, and not to imitate the higher pastimes of the Lord, or take that as an excuse to continue our frivolous activities, because then real bhakti will never manifest in our hearts. Srila Prabhupada says it's a stumbling block. So which means, if we keep on doing this, then we will not progress on the path of bhakti. So, one needs to check one's propensity to enjoy. Many times, even in as preachers, there may be a tendency, you know, to play, you know, the knight in shining armor, where somebody is in, some Mataji is coming and saying, Prabhuji, I have a problem, I'm so inspired, you know. So can you please help me? And immediately, oh sure, why not? So that kind of a tendency will be there. So one has to check that tendency. And we will come to the aspects of, you know, how to deal with these kind of situations little bit down. Chanakya Niti is that, before you save yourself first, before you save others, first save your own self. So our first duty is to save ourselves, not to save the opposite sex. Because in saving that, we may fall down ourselves. So therefore, this principle should not be taken lightly, is what is advised by the acharyas. So that is one. The second is that just because we have some seniority or we are in a position of some power, it doesn't mean that this rule does not apply to us. Also, simply because we are elderly, it doesn't mean that this rule does not apply to us. Because sex desire has got nothing to do with age. Sex desire, or control of sex desire rather, has got everything to do with one's internal spiritual advancement. Therefore, whether we are young, whether we are old, this principle applies to everyone. So that is the second learning that comes out. The third learning, very interestingly, that comes out from this section is that on many occasions, we will find that good counsel that saves us in our spiritual life will come from our juniors in Krishna consciousness, not necessarily from our seniors. How do we know that? Because you will find that towards the later sections of this, after this verse, you will find the people who Brahma created, the sages, they go back and save Brahma from this problem. Because Brahma is now attracted to his own daughter, so the people who he created, they go and advise. The children are advising the father, hang on, what are you doing? And then they are advising him to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then Brahma realizes his folly. So sometimes good counsel can come from people who are junior. So in one sense, we never consider anyone as junior to us in our spiritual life. There is something to learn from every devotee in the congregation. Because somebody may be advanced in certain aspects in which we may not be advanced. So, and it's interesting because this fall down can happen so suddenly. Few verses back, Brahmaji was advising Lord Shiva, hang on, cool down. Don't create destruction. And he gave such wonderful advice, and after a few verses, he falls down. So this is the nature of the material world. We could be advising someone, and we could be falling down after a few days. So therefore, we have to be very careful because it happened to Brahma. So what to speak of us? So that is the third lesson. That good counsel can come from juniors. The fourth lesson that comes out is that Lord Brahma, just because we heard this pastime today, we could harbor certain ill feelings or negative feelings about Lord Brahma. Oh, Lord Brahma, he fell down. How can he, you know, have sexual inclination towards his own daughter? I thought I had a lot of respect for him. So these kind of thoughts can come in the mind after hearing this person. So that's a caveat. So again it is emphasized that this happened to one specific Lord Brahma who had not heard Srimad Bhagavatam from the Lord and who was not blessed by the Lord that he will not fall down. So even this Lord Brahma should not be condemned. Because again down the line it is mentioned that the acts of very advanced souls cannot be judged by ordinary conditioned souls. Knowing that such act may sometimes, that such devotees may sometimes act in these ways, but for giving us a lesson. And the bewilderment of such devotees may be circumstantially arranged by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to give a higher lesson. For example, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we also find the pastime of Mohini Murti. So when Lord Vishnu took the form of Mohini, what to speak of bewildering the asuras and the devatas, he bewildered Lord Shiva himself. That same Lord Shiva, who during the Chitraketu pastime, had kept Parvati on his lap and was giving, addressing the celibate sages. And there it is mentioned that how controlled Lord Shiva is. Even Lord Shiva was bewildered. But does it mean that we then start casting aspersions on Lord Shiva? Obviously not, because there is a pastime that is going on here. So we don't know. Sometimes the Lord may use some of his intimate devotees to and bewilder them, put them in, under a certain illusion and to create a pastime to give a larger lesson to all of us, saying that if such great personality can fall down, what to speak of all of you. So that is the fourth lesson we can generally draw out from this section. The fifth lesson that we get from this section is that even if we happen to commit such a sin at any point of time in our spiritual career, we must accept it with humility and genuinely atone for such a sin, leading by our own personal example. And which Lord Brahma also did. Lord Brahma, when the sages went to him and gave him good counsel, he immediately accepted. Initially he was a bit hesitant, but later on he accepted that. And he immediately gave up his body, which means that he gave up the mentality of sex desire. That is also mentioned. So there are five lessons. Just to sum up, the first lesson was that one cannot take one's spiritual advancement for granted. The second was, just because we have a seniority or a position of power, doesn't mean, or age on our side, doesn't mean that these rules do not apply to us. Because yad yad acharati shreshas, whatever great men do, whatever seniors do, it is a general tendency that juniors will follow that. The third was that good counsel sometimes or many occasions can come from people who are juniors to us. Or sometimes it could come from our own children to us, like it came for Lord Brahma. The fourth lesson was that Lord Brahma should not be condemned simply because of this, because sometimes the Lord can arrange through a senior devotee to teach us certain valuable lessons. And the fifth lesson was that if we happen to fall down at any point in time, then to acknowledge that humbly and truly atone for that by increasing our devotional service the way Lord Brahma did. Now moving on to the next section. Now our acharyas have given us lot of practical principles in this regard on how we should check ourselves against this great danger. Because as Tathastha Shakti, as marginal energy, we know that all of us, no matter in which position we are always vulnerable to this fall down. So therefore, a lot of principles are given of how men should interact with women within Krishna consciousness. So there are five principles that are mentioned in this regard. The first is that one must consider a woman other than one's wife to be one's mother. one must consider a woman, every man must consider a woman who is not his wife to be as good as his mother. So, it is interesting, it is mentioned mother and not sister or anything like that. Because in India, you know, I remember when I was in school, we had this concept of mu boli behen. So people, you know, some boy will say that maine usko behen mana hai and all that. I remember in Hindi, you know, sometimes I speak in Hindi, so I'll repeat in English. So some boy will say that, you know, I have considered that girl as my sister. She considers me as brother. Mu boli behen means what? No, mu boli means what? Verbal sister, whatever that is. Okay, so there was one case in my school itself that there is this festival called as Raksha Bandhan, which comes, you know, where the sister will tie, you know, some rakhi. Rakhi is a string, it's a decorative string, which is tied by the sister in the brother's hands. Okay, now yes, you know, we understand that the seminal sister is tying it, the sibling is tying it to the brother, fine. But this was going on rampantly in school. Okay, and one boy, I remember that he had this rakhi tied by this girl till probably grade 10 or grade 11. After that, I never met him in life. And then later on, someone told me he married her. And I'm thinking, oh, the mu boli behen, you know, she was his, you know, verbal sister and whatever, whatever. But this is the nature of the material world. All this will go on till, you know, the attraction comes in some other way. So therefore, there is no mu boli behen concept in the shastras, in the scriptures. Clearly it is said that consider a woman other than your wife to be the mother, no sister business. So Srila Prabhupada has kept it very, very simple. So as it is, we have so many bodily designations of so-called father, mother, etc. So we don't need to increase that by adding on some more external designations. Because if one really is very advanced in spiritual life, and if compassion to all living entities has manifested in one's heart genuinely, then one doesn't need to give any of these melodramatic designations, you know, of sister and whatever, whatever. One can simply go out and preach as a devotee and give compassion to the whole world. So there is no need to add any of these designations into our portfolio. So that is one. So consider a woman other than one's wife to be one's mother. Second is that grihastha ashram is not a license to deal freely with women. And Srila Prabhupada says that the principle of man and woman is like the principle of fire and butter. So just because one is even a householder, it doesn't mean that this gives that because someone is a grihastha devotee, then he can go on talking to every other mataji in the congregation, under citing his ashram. And even within the institution of marriage, it is mentioned that this activity must be regulated and must be used only for procreation. So the acharyas are constantly reminding us. Even when Shankarshanta Sadhikari Maharaj was here, he was hammering this point virtually every class. Because the fire and the butter should not be together, and if they are together, then it is a challenging situation. So all the more take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Third, talking to other women should be purely need based and not frivolous. And even as a grihastha, if one has to talk to another mataji, it should be preferably done in the presence of one's own wife, who can usually keep the over smart hubbies in check. So it is always safe to do that. The fourth aspect is that if matajis need counseling or some guidance in their spiritual life, it is better done by matajis. So men need not immediately roll up their sleeves and then go, okay, yeah, what's your problem? I'm there. So that's not required at all. So matajis take counseling from matajis. Safe situation. In the rare event that that experience requires, you know, for example, sometimes, you know, there are situations wherein the devotee mataji is not is having some issues with the husband. So from that point of view, if there is that kind of situation even comes, then usually it's not that the Prabhuji goes and, you know, talks to the Mataji saying that, don't, I understand the man's psychology, blah blah. Okay. Both the couple can then go together and then talk to the Mataji. But never a Prabhuji counseling a Mataji. That situation is very, very dangerous because emotions are involved and it can lead to our own fall down in trying to save someone else's problem. The fifth is that services that involve too much interaction with women. It could happen that there could be services in the temple. So such services which involve too much interaction with women, for example, assisting, let's say, in the Jhulan Yatra, because the Jhula is usually decorated by mostly by Matajis. But the Prabhujis may have to bring a ladder and whatever. You know, there are so many services where, you know, we can't avoid this interaction. So at least as a grihastha, this should be then done through one's own wife. So it's better that the grihastha has his wife there. You know. And it is better that brahmacharis don't get involved also, you know, in these kind of services as much as possible. Don't directly involve with the Matajis in the congregation. That will protect their own ashrama. The sanctity of that ashram is protected by that. So these are some principles of dealings of men, especially grihastha men, with women. And then there is also dealings of women with men, which is also given. That also should be need based. So preferably the Matajis, if there is any issue they have, they can take their husband along and go for spiritual counseling or advice to the other Prabhuji or Mataji. Also take counseling from other women counselors or men in the presence of their wives, which we already discussed before. Services that involve too much interaction with brahmacharis, this is for Matajis. Services that involve too much interaction with brahmacharis or other men should be done through the husband. So this is Vedic culture. This is Vaishnava etiquette. And finally, adopting proper dress code while coming to the temple. So, you know, at least we do not do a negative contribution to the ashrama. So when we come adequately covered to the temple. So, these principles are given by the Acharyas, because if Brahmaji can fall down, then what to speak of us? Because there are two types of jivas, Nitya Baddha and Nitya Siddha. So, usually devotees consider, and it's always advisable also, that devotees consider themselves as Nitya Baddha. Or Nitya Baddhas, who through sadhana are trying to become sadhana siddhas. That is our process. So we are conditioned, and through the process of devotional service, we are burning our conditioning and getting purified to get qualified to go back to Godhead. However, there is the other section of devotees called as Nitya Siddha devotees, who are actually, who they don't fall down at all. They are eternal residents of Golok Vrindavan, of the spiritual world. However, they come down to this material world to assist the Lord in his pastimes and to inspire us in our devotional life by their own example. So, two such Nitya Siddha devotees are Shivananda Sen and Swarup Damodar Goswami. Incidentally, it is their disappearance day today. So, just for our own purification, we will speak some words on their life. So Shivanand Sen, he was an intimate associate of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Not only him, but his entire family, sons, and even his servants were all devotees of Lord Chaitanya. So, a very significant pastime from Shivan Sen's life, a very popular pastime, is that before the rainy season or the Chaturmasya, Shivananda Sen used to lead all the associates of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all the devotees of Lord Chaitanya, he used to lead all of them from Bengal to Puri, because the Lord had taken sannyas and he was resident in Puri. So all these devotees were always in separation of Lord Chaitanya. So Shivananda Sen used to facilitate the meeting of all these devotees with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he used to take an entire yatra all the way from Bengal to Puri. And not only that, he used to bear all the expenses that are concerned with this journey, which includes meals, food, which includes accommodation, as well as paying the toll at the various toll booths between the states. Now, this yatra is mentioned that devotees would depart 1 month in advance or before the Ratha Yatra in Jagannath Puri. And they would go on foot to Jagannath Puri. So, as the yatra left Bengal, the first destination that they usually used to go to was Shantipur, where Advaita Acharya and his good wife Sita Thakurani, Mataji, she also used to join the yatra from Shantipur. So, all these devotees are going on foot, and then they meet, go to Shantipur, take Advaita Acharya and Sita Thakurani Mataji, and from there, this yatra then used to go and proceed to Sri Mayapur Dham. And they used to go to Sri Mayapur Dham primarily to take blessings from Sachi Mata, who was still there. And then after taking blessings of Sachi Mata, the whole yatra will then proceed to Puri, singing kirtans of the Lord all along the way. Now, Shivananda Sen had taken the responsibility on himself to pay toll at the various toll booths. So when this yatra was once proceeding towards Puri, what happened was Shivananda Sen had some issue with the toll authorities. So he had to stay back and let the yatra proceed further to settle with the toll authorities. Now, because he was responsible for virtually everything, right from food, accommodation, toll, all planning, everything was done hands-on by him, and he had to stay back, you know, to deal with the toll authorities, when the yatra party reached the next destination, there was no food available for them immediately, and there was no accommodation for them also. Now, and Lord Nityananda was also personally present in this party. So when the group reached there, and Lord Nityananda found out that there was no accommodation, there was no food, and the devotees are, you know, just waiting and being inconvenienced, Lord Nityananda got very, very angry. And in his anger, he cursed out loudly, "May the son of Shivananda Sen die." And the sad part was, when this curse was mentioned, Shivananda Sen's wife was also there present. Now you can imagine the feeling of a mother when the Supreme Personality of Godhead curses that may your son die. So you can imagine her emotions at this point in time. Obviously her emotions swelled up and she lost her control. She lost her cool. And when Shivananda Sen eventually came after settling the toll booth problem, she went right to him and was crying uncontrollably. She was sobbing uncontrollably and telling him that Lord Nityananda is so upset that he has cursed our son to die. Now Shivananda Sen, being a very advanced devotee, instead of focusing on, you know, why Lord Nityananda, how he was upset and why he cursed and how then he should protect his son and, you know, try to, you know, negotiate with Lord Nityananda, he didn't do any of that or console his wife. He said, "Hang on, stay cool, don't worry about anything." He straight went to Lord Nityananda and paid dandavat pranams to the feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and apologized for this. And in response, Lord Nityananda kicked him. So you can imagine that. First there is a curse on your son, now you get a kick from Lord Nityananda. Now, as soon as Lord Nityananda kicked him, Shivananda Sen immediately got up. The first thing was duty. So he went, ensured very quickly that accommodation was sorted out, all the devotees were comfortably placed in their respective guest houses, and that all the devotees, sumptuous prasadam was arranged and all of them were fed. He came back to Lord Nityananda and showed his face to him only after he did that task. So he did all that and ensured that Lord Nityananda also had prasadam. So after Lord Nityananda had his prasadam, then Shivananda Sen went back to him and, paying obeisances to him, said, "Today, in accepting me as your servant," this is very interesting, "today, in accepting me as your servant, you punished me fittingly according to my offense. But such is your tenderness that under the pretense of punishment, you actually awarded me with great mercy." Who within the three worlds, who within the three worlds can understand your character? The dust of your lotus feet is very difficult to obtain even for Lord Brahma. But even such a low, vile wretch as myself received the touch of these lotus feet on his body. Today, my birth and the heritage of my forefathers has become successful. And today, I have received devotion to Sri Krishna, as well as the ordinary objects of attainment for human beings, religion, economic development, and sense gratification. So when he offered such prayers of humility, Lord Nityananda's heart melted, and as Shivananda Sen rose, Lord Nityananda embraced him, gave him his causeless mercy. So this was the advanced consciousness of Shivananda Sen. It is mentioned that his worshipable deities were Sri Sri Gaur Gopal, whose location is unknown at present, and one of his illustrious son, Kavi Karanapur, who wrote the Gaur Ganodesha Deepika, where the where it is clearly mentioned who in Gaur Leela is who in Krishna Leela. It is mentioned that Shivananda Sen is none other than a gopi in Vrindavan whose name was Bira, who is a personal messenger of Srimati Radharani. So this gopi Bira in Krishna Leela came down as Shivananda Sen in Gauranga Leela. The other personality whose disappearance day to day is Swarup Damodar Goswami. Swarup Damodar Goswami, as all of us know, is an eternal associate of Lord Chaitanya, and he is considered to be amongst the closest of closest of closest to Lord Chaitanya. In fact, he was the personal secretary to Lord Chaitanya. Not only was he dear to Lord Chaitanya, but he was also dear, very dear to Lord Nityananda, Advaita Acharya and Srivas Pandit. He is regarded as the most important companion of Lord Chaitanya in many texts. Swarup Damodar Goswami's knowledge of the Shastras was compared to Brihaspati. His scholarship was practically unlimited. However, his humility was such that he spoke very little with others and preferred to remain alone, serving Lord Chaitanya. So therefore, because he maintained a very low profile, few people were actually aware of his real position and advancement. Swarup Damodar Goswami was completely conversant with the understanding of rasa tattva or the mellows of devotion to Sri Krishna, and his body was fully imbued with love of the Lord. Whenever anyone wanted to present Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with some book or some verse or some song that they had composed, Swarup Damodar Goswami had to hear it first. That was the rule. Swarup Damodar Goswami would first hear it, what they had written down, and if it was bona fide enough to be presented to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he did not want any writing to disturb the pure mood of love of Lord Chaitanya. So it had to go through him. And only if such a writing was completely untainted will he permit those writings to be presented to Lord Chaitanya. So shastrically he was very advanced, like Brihaspati. Spiritually very very advanced. He knew, he was already in high levels of Prema Bhakti. Even in music and singing it is mentioned that he was akin to a Gandharva. So much so that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would always ask him to recite the Gita Govinda. Personally he used to recite to Lord Chaitanya, as well as the writings of Chandidas and Vidyapati, for the transcendental pleasure of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he was a personal singer to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. So needless to say, because he was so dear to Lord Chaitanya, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu always kept Swarup Damodar Goswami very close to him. And whenever Mahaprabhu became immersed in any particular ecstatic emotion, Swarup Damodar Goswami would perform a kirtan in that particular mood of Lord Chaitanya. Because he used to understand the innermost feelings of Lord Chaitanya like no one else. And then he used to perform that kirtan. Later on, another great personality by the name Srila Ramananda Rai also joined him in doing the same, in facilitating the same activities for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So during the later years, Lord Chaitanya entrusted Swarup Damodar Goswami to look after and instruct another great devotee, Raghunath Das Goswami. So Swarup Damodar Goswami was a Siksha Guru for Raghunath Das Goswami in that regard. Swarup Damodar Goswami is considered as Lalita Sakhi in Krishna Leela. Today is also the day, at least as per the Melbourne calendar, I am not sure whether it is actually happening in Puri or not, but it is the day of Ratha Yatra in Jagannath Puri. So we will just spend 1 or 2 minutes to discuss that. So the Ratha Yatra, it is mentioned in this book, Jai Jagannath, by Dhruva Maharaj Prabhu, that Ratha Yatra is celebrated on the second day of the waxing moon in Ashad month. This is called as the festival of chariots. So we will not get into the detail, there are so many details, but we don't have that much time, we have to close in 2-3 minutes. So today is the day when Lord Jagannath, the Lord of the entire universe, comes out to give his darshan to the whole world. Prior to the Ratha Yatra is the Snan Yatra, which is conducted, where Lord, the deities are bathed, and after bathing, the deities develop a cold. So then the deities go in hibernation, and then they recover by the preparations which the devotees make, the herbal preparations which the devotees make out of their love, and then after recovering, they come out then, and then give darshan to the whole world. So on this day, Lord Jagannath, Baldev and Subhadra, they come out of the main gate in Jagannath Puri on the main road, which is called as the Grand Road. And then the deities are placed in the cart. It is mentioned here in this book that the first deity to come out is Lord Baladev. And then Sudarshan Chakra comes out. Then Subhadra Mai comes out. And then finally Lord Jagannath comes out to give his darshan. So the procession is taken from the Jagannath Puri temple on Grand Road. And the procession goes on for approximately 2 kilometers all the way to the Gundicha temple. Now the Gundicha temple is also prepared to receive Lord Jagannath via an activity called as the Gundicha Marjan, or the cleaning of the Gundicha temple. And then the Lord Jagannath, Baldev, Subhadra, their lordships stay in Gundicha temple for 8 to 9 days. It is mentioned 8 to 9 days because it doesn't happen in Puri that in one shot the Lord goes before sunset and reaches Gundicha. Many times the Lord refuses to move. Therefore, it does happen that the sun has already set, and then they don't do the Ratha Yatra after sunset. So the Lord waits, and then after that it has to go. So therefore, there are some delays sometimes. So it's mentioned 8 to 9 days in Gundicha temple, depending on that. And then there is a return Yatra where the Lord comes back from the Gundicha temple, and through the Simhadwar, through the Simhadwar, then the lordships enter the Jagannath temple. So that is the Rath Yatra. So this particular Rath Yatra marks the commemorates the journey of Lord Krishna from Dwarka to Kurukshetra, and it also is significant from the point of view that this brings to the forefront the mood of separation which the gopis have from the Lord. And then the gopis are now, the spiritual significance of Rath Yatra is gopis are trying to invite Lord Jagannath back into their hearts, because they are so much in the mood of separation of the Lord. So it's a very important day to meditate on Rath Yatra and to take shelter of their lordships, Lord Jagannath, Baldev and Subhadra. So these are the three significant things on today's date. So we thought we'll spend some time discussing that. So we'll end the class here and ask if there are any comments, corrections or questions. So my limited understanding on this topic is that, yes, it's interesting you mentioned this, because few days back also we were discussing this, that sometimes when, you know, in preaching, I completely, you know, accept that view of yours, that the presence of a woman lends, in my view, this is my personal view, lends a lot of dignity to preaching. Because yes, men can do so many things, but even as grihasthas, as householders, when we go out and preach, it always gives there is a different mood of preaching when the husband and wife together are preaching, you know, to the congregation, rather than only when the husband is preaching or only when the wife is preaching. Like Anirudh Prabhu many times says that a stable grihastha family inspires the congregation greatly, rather than only the Prabhuji preaching and, you know, or only the Mataji excelling in her own preaching. So this is my personal view, that you know, the presence of Matajis is definitely a big plus factor in spreading Krishna consciousness, no doubt about it. So specifically talking about your question on, you know, the presence of Matajis bringing in more Prabhujis, yes, that is quite possible. Because and again, this is my view. I have nothing against, you know, Prabhujis, or, you know, nothing, not favoring Matajis or anything like that. That Matajis generally tend to be less fanatic. That's my observation. You know, in their preaching, you know, they are generally gentle, and especially, you know, it again, it depends on the maturity of the individual also largely. But specifically, you know, Matajis preaching gives a perception of, you know, more seriousness, you know, to the movement. And Matajis usually can bring in that aspect of care and affection, because that is why they are called Matajis. No? So it's even when we see our own father and mother, if you see, the father sometimes, many times, thinks with the intelligence, but mother always thinks from the heart. So that is the nature of a woman. And thinking from the heart is very essential to connect to people in the preaching movement. Okay, so it is quite possible that the new people who come, they feel that Matajis are able to empathize with their problem better, because it's a heart-to-heart conversation that's happening. So sometimes, yes, the Prabhuji's may feel comfortable with the gentleness that a Mataji brings about. But we need to always remember that this activity should not be done alone. If it is done in an urban yoga setting where Prabhuji's are also there, Mataji's are also there, and then Mataji's are also making certain points such that the new sadhaka who has come is able to connect better and appreciate Krishna consciousness, gets a better feeling of love and care, you know, in that setting, that is fine. What is being told here is that one-on-one which goes on, you know, later on. For example, later on from an urban yoga, if the Prabhuji there, if for example some sadhaka who has come, some boy who has come in urban yoga, starts directly asking the Mataji, Mataji, what's your cell number, you know, if I have some problem, can I contact you? You know, and that's where, cut that. That is where then the danger comes. Because both have to be protected. The Mataji also has to be protected then. And that person also has to be protected. Because sometimes a person may come with the right agenda, but because Maya is Maya, you never know when that starts deviating slowly into some other track. So therefore, from an institutional point of view, yes, you know, that activity can be done. But when it comes to one-on-one, that's where the fire and butter principle has to be applied. It has to be very careful. So it has to be done in public. No one-on-one counseling of Matajis and Prabhujis. So, I don't know whether I answered that question. Anything else? Alright. Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Jai Prabhupada ki. Jai.